Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning. It is 6:04. The big week is here. Yes, indeed, it is the final Monday before Christmas, if we wanted to make a really big deal out of it. For most of us, it just means it's a busy day. Wrapping up year-end projects and proposals and such, and hopefully planning to get some time away with family. I'm Austin Hill, and this is the Faith Radio Network. We're so glad you're with us. Thank you for being in our audience. Thank you for listening. And thank you for your support if you're on our support team here at My Faith Radio. You can get started with us anytime, end of the year, and even at Christmas time. It's a great time for that. MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com. Coming up later this morning, this will be fun, in just about half an hour from now. Please make note here, and just a mental note, if nothing else. I'm going to be asking for you to participate in our program, and I thought we could just reminisce and reflect just a little bit on Christmas and Christmas holiday traditions. My question that I'll pose, and we'll open up the phone lines here at about 6:35, what is your favorite Christmas and Christmas seasonal tradition? Is it something in your family? Is it something in your church? And I would also pose this question, how do you believe, if you've been a churched person for a good many years, at least some large portion of your lifetime, as I have. I was raised in church and strayed from the faith to some degree or another in my collegiate years, but certainly came back. Church and regular worship have been a part of my life for almost all of my life. If you've been a part of Christian church practice and Christian church fellowship for an extended period of life, how would you say the celebration of Christmas has evolved and changed? It certainly has evolved and changed, at least in my experience anyway, and I'll tell you my thoughts on that. We'll take calls at about 6:35 this morning. What is your favorite Christmas and Christmas holiday tradition, and how has the celebration of Christmas evolved and changed over the course of your lifetime? All of that is coming up later this morning, so stand by for that. Just about an hour away, our great friend Dr. Linda Mental, we like to call her the relationship doctor. Dr. Linda Mental will join us with 10 suggestions on avoiding, I'll call it the holiday blues. She says it, and she writes so eloquently in her books, in her blog posts and editorial columns. Her big national column is out in publications around the country. But her latest piece is 10 Steps to Avoid Holiday Depression. And try as we may to make the Christmas holiday season happy, and as much as we place great expectations on ourselves and our family members and friends and such, oftentimes this season is just very, very difficult. It's not happy at all. And we are best to be honest about that even before the actual Christmas day arrives, and strategize ways in which we can hopefully avoid trouble and emotional difficulty for ourselves, stay out of trouble, and also, equally as important, be helpful to those around us who may be struggling, either family members or friends, people in our church community, and so forth. And sometimes, you know, it's suffering is just something that cannot be avoided. It has to be traveled through as opposed to driven around, so to speak. And I understand that. But being honest going into the season and understanding what might lie ahead, that's probably a good strategy beforehand. So Dr. Linda Mental here to talk about that coming up at about 7:10 this morning. So stand by for that. Also, lots more on the Angel Tree Project. It is not too late, by the way, to get involved with Angel Tree, the nonprofit outreach of Prison Fellowship Ministries, the group that does such a great job reaching out to the children who are estranged from a parent because mom or dad is in jail. That's what Angel Tree does. You can call them right now and get started at 1-855-59-ANGEL, 1-855-59-ANGEL. So many Faith Radio listeners have stepped up and come on board with the kids there at Angel Tree, and we'll let you hear more about their good work coming up later this morning. Now, that said, we do have some unfortunate turns of events, some nothing short of tragic current events that occurred over the weekend. They have to do with law enforcement officers, police departments around the country. And I will tell you that this issue is complex. Tension between local law enforcement, in most cases we're talking about local police forces that serve local communities. The tension is real. It has now become deadly, not only with law enforcement officers, but civilians as well. It is not race specific. It is not something that is one dimensional. It is multidimensional. And I believe Christians in America in particular have to be very careful not to be driven by the narratives that appear in the dominant news media, not to be driven by the presuppositions and the narratives from pop culture. We have got to be, this is really a time, I believe, where we need to be, as the scriptures would command us to, be salt and light. Salt being a preservative, light being something that shines towards the truth of the matter. And the truth is very complex. I'll tell you what happened over the weekend with the loss of life among police forces in two different states. I'll tell you about that, and dissect this one just a little bit. Something to be prayerful of, but I think more proactivity is warranted as well. We'll talk about that in just a moment. It's all right here. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 10. It is now 6:09. Our program continues. Don't go away.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
It's now 6:12 on the Faith Radio Network. And I'm Austin Hill, and thank you for being here. We seek to connect faith to life every weekday morning from 6 till 8 in the morning. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Coming up, another update on the good work of Angel Tree, the outreach of Prison Fellowship Ministries. We'll get to that in just a few moments. Over the last two or three weeks or so, a couple of individuals' names have come to light in the dominant news media, and for very good reason. A young man from Ferguson, Missouri, who lost his life in an altercation with police there, named Michael Brown. He was that's one of the names that has come to light. Michael Brown, an 18-year-old African-American black man, was shot and killed by a white male police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, back over the summer. And, of course, there was a very broad-scale, very far-reaching grand jury investigation into that incident, an investigation of the conduct of the white male police officer in question. And the grand jury, now you can deny that this is true. You can assume that this grand jury, which comprised people of all political persuasions and people who were both black and white, by the way, it was a multiracial, multi-political party affiliation grand jury, but they determined that Michael Brown actually assaulted the white male police officer. They determined that Michael Brown reached inside the white male police officer's car seeking to apprehend his gun. And, you know, in a civil society, one shall not mess with police officers and provoke police officers in that way, lest one run afoul of the law. That's probably a pretty good little pearl of wisdom to live by. But Michael Brown did this. He ended up being shot by a white male police officer and subsequently died from those wounds. You probably know the name Michael Brown from Ferguson, Missouri. In a less high-profile, but nonetheless still quite high-profile incident, a black man named Eric Garner from New York City, he was involved in an altercation with police officers, multiple officers, in as much as he was trespassing, and he resisted arrest. And police officers were ordered by New York Police Department officials to engage him in a chokehold, to bring him to the ground, to subdue him, and to get him handcuffed. In the chokehold process, Eric Garner was killed. He ended up dying. And there was an investigation of that incident, and once again, authorities said the police acted appropriately, commensurate with Eric Garner's violation, and there will be no charges filed. Both Michael Brown and Eric Garner were black men. And this has erupted nationally, as you probably are well aware, into a lot of contentious, very nasty debates over race in America, ethnicity in America, if you will. And most of the protestations, most of the division in our country has to do with the assumption that white-on-black crime, especially white law enforcement officers using undue force and killing black people, most of the protests had to do with the assumption that that kind of activity is normal in society, or it's become normal in society. And obviously, if it's normal, that's highly unacceptable. But there have been calls for the killing of police officers from activists. There have been a lot of cries for justice. I don't know that there's a whole lot of recognition or agreement on what justice is. There have also been some gatherings, at least one that I'm aware of recently, and there will be more coming up in the first quarter of next year, gatherings of evangelical Christians who have come together or will come together and try to figure out how can the church be a part of the solution, the healing, if you will, between the races in our country, especially black versus white. Well, over the weekend, amid multiple claims of and multiple cries for the killing of police officers, I'm not making this up. This has really gone on over the past several weeks, especially in the aftermath of the death of civilian Eric Garner in New York City. His death and the police engaging him in a chokehold and all of that's captured on video. You may very well have seen that. It was quite a striking video, and it was very disturbing to watch. That said, there have been activist groups around the country saying it's time for police officers to die. And indeed, over the weekend, some police officers did die. In New York City, two police officers, Officer Wenjian Liu, 32-year-old gentleman, and Officer Rafael Ramos, age 40, they were killed at close range. Some people are saying they were shot and killed execution style. The killing is being regarded as an assassination. These two officers, one of them appearing to have a Vietnamese-sounding name, at least to me, the other appearing to have a Hispanic name, Ramos. Two non-white police officers were shot almost at point blank while they were just simply sitting in their patrol car in the borough of Brooklyn in New York City. The assailant, the man believed to have been the killer, was a black man. He also had ties to what many believe to be an Islamic radical group here in the United States of America. After killing two non-black, but also non-white police officers, the suspect turned the gun on himself and committed suicide. That was in New York City. We also had yet another police officer shot and killed in the city of Tarpon Springs, Florida. That happened early Sunday morning. The shooting of the police officers in New York City, that was Saturday afternoon, and the shooting in state of Florida was later on Sunday morning. The shooting occurred in a residential area in Florida during the wee hours of early Sunday morning. Very similar situation. This is a random killing of police officers, allegedly and purportedly. This is what these killers are leaving this message behind, even if and when they take their own life. They're saying, we're doing this as justice for these two black men losing their lives at the hands of police officers earlier this year. Folks, this is, it's not enough. My friend, this is not enough to simply look at this senseless, random murder of law enforcement officers. It's not enough, I don't believe, for us to just simply say, well, I don't approve of that. This needs to be condemned. This needs to be condemned. And I don't know that very many people in America are going to be willing to step up and say, we appreciate those who serve in law enforcement capacities. Law enforcement agencies are not perfect. No individual officer is perfect. I have been critical at times of local police departments around the country, especially over the last couple of years. There have been some very destructive trends with police departments, mostly with involvement by the federal government across our country. Been some very disturbing trends over the last 2 years, but really for the last 4 or 5 years. Last couple of years, they've been more pronounced. I understand these people are not perfect. But I believe in the effort of being salt and light in our culture, Christians need to recognize some of the real basic fundamental necessities of a civil society. And effective law enforcement and respecting those who do carry the badge, that's kind of one of those essentials. So I hope you'll join me in prayerfully considering the way forward here. But most news media outlets are going to ignore the senseless killing of these law enforcement officers. It casts a very ugly shadow, even worse than it was 4 or 5 days ago. A very ugly shadow is cast over these protesters who are saying, we need justice. And it's a very serious matter. We'll continue in moments. It's now 619 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. And boy, do we need to connect faith to the events of our world on a day like this. More in just a moment. Stay with us. It's now 6:22. Good morning and welcome. Monday morning underway, the week of Christmas. This is the Faith Radio Network. Still time for you and for me and for all of us to get on board with the Angel Tree program, the program that connects children with their parents who are incarcerated. Let's listen now to the stories of Antonio and Alicia.
The most passionate Angel Tree volunteers are those who have themselves been rescued. Do you know what it's like to absolutely hit bottom? Antonio remembers.
When I was incarcerated, my children felt like daddy left them. Daddy didn't care about them. They were left back with their mom struggling because I cared more about drugs than I did about them.
Back home, Alicia wanted and expected nothing from Antonio. This was his fourth time back in prison, and she thought no power on earth could save him.
If you'd have known him 10 years ago, you wouldn't want to be in the same room with him. He was a very scary person. He was very violent and very selfish. And when God broke him, he broke him.
God visited Stateville cell T-235.
God came when I was in prison in Stateville in cell T-235. Is the first time that I met Jesus Christ. As soon as I got a taste of Jesus, that sweet, sweet taste of Jesus, is when I began just trying to serve the Lord. It's not about me at all anymore. It's about Jesus. It's about my wife. It's about my children.
Antonio and Alicia know desperation, but they also know restoration. Their pastor asked them to head up Angel Tree for their church. That first year, they stretched their resources and decided their little church in the middle of a crime-ridden, drug-infested neighborhood could reach out to 10 children.
We asked for 10 children's names, and we got them. And I was just curious to how many more children there were that weren't taken. And I was told that there were 75 other children that were on the list for Angel Tree, and no church had taken them.
We can celebrate 10 children being remembered, but we can't ignore 75 children denied. For Antonio, it was especially troubling. He knows what Angel Tree means to an incarcerated parent.
That's a very big thing in prison, to be able to fill out the application in hopes that some kind person, they're going to give from their heart. And that gift is not coming from them. It's addressed with my name on it. And Angel Tree is a worthy cause.
Will you partner with Alicia and Antonio in this worthy cause? Can you help bring Christmas and the sweet love of Jesus to one or two Angel Tree kids?
The number to call is 1-855-59-ANGEL. 1-855-59-ANGEL. 59 Angel. You'll connect with the live operator, and it won't take long on the phone. They will explain to you how little it costs, how little money is required for you and I to step up and make the difference. Won't you make that call now? 1-855-59-ANGEL. 1-855-59-ANGEL. It's now 627. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. A look ahead to our noon hour here at Faith Radio. That's coming up next. It's now 627 on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, Monday underway. I'm Austin Hill. Connecting Faith happens at 12 noon Central Time here on Faith Radio. Last Friday, host Jo Rathmanner was in the house. She welcomed author Holly Melton to the program as they talked about Holly's book, Follow My Lead. Here's part of that conversation.
And Holly, you write in your book that you have a theory about people that it says, my theory, as I've traveled around the world, is that we as humans have two great desires, to be fully known and to still be fully loved. Talk more about that and how we can help that along.
Yeah, as I've engaged with people, guys and girls, all different ages, I was trying to see, is there one thing we can all relate to, whether I'm in an atheist country or a Buddhist country, because sometimes it feels intimidating, you know, because you're with these people of all these different faiths. And so if you can find the longing in their heart, this is what I say to people. We're not sharing the gospel so that people get to heaven. We're not sharing the gospel so people don't go to hell. We're not sharing the gospel so that people have a happier life on earth. But we're sharing the gospel because the God that created us wants to know us intimately, and he wants to know other people intimately and have this deep personal relationship. So we're talking about a relationship, and no one fully knows us perfectly and knows all of our good and all of our bad and yet perfectly loves us like God. And so if there's a way we could have people relate to, you're right, I want to be known by people. I want them to know me and still accept me and love me even though I'm not perfect. And that desire isn't fulfilled in marriage. That desire isn't fulfilled when you have kids or when you get successful in your job. That desire can only happen when they have an encounter with Jesus. And so if we could get people to grasp that that's their deepest desire, then we're having a conversation not just about that they're sinners, which we do need to, you know, that is real, but we're not just about, do you want to be in heaven, but about being known and loved by the God that created them. And to me, that's a way more personal way to engage with a person about the gospel than just what they get or what they don't get if they receive Jesus.
Well, and it's difficult to start a conversation with, well, you know, you're a sinner. No one's going to respond very well to that, although I've heard it taught and said that way as well. But it doesn't seem to have quite the punch that it would have if you actually engaged with them on a level, like you said, that was emotional, or a level where they realized that there was indeed something missing in their lives.
That's us, Jo Rathmanner, speaking with author Holly Melton on last Friday's edition of Connecting Faith. Coming up at 12 noon today, Central Time, host Neil Stavem joins the program again. He welcomes Crown Ministries CEO Chuck Bentley as they talk about financial planning and stewardship into the new year. That's Connecting Faith with host Neil Stavem, 12 noon Central Time today on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:31. Good morning. Welcome to Monday. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. SRN News on the way next.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
This is the Austin Hill in the Morning program. Great to have you with us. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join the program, 1-877-933-2484. 1-877-933-2484. That's our number to Faith Radio Network. And my question for you right now is simply this. What is your favorite Christmas or holiday tradition? And how do you believe holiday traditions have changed, Christmas in particular? How do you believe the celebration of Christmas has changed over the years, over the course of your lifetime? This is, yeah, I'm sure there's some common threads with all of us, but this is also very personal and very specific to each of us. And I just thought we'd spend some time talking about it. Here we are just days away from Christmas. It's the last Monday before Christmas. And I just wanted to open up the phone lines and give you the opportunity to sound off. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. This might be, and I said earlier, you know, if you've been a churched person for a good bit of your life, I'm in particular interested in your take on this, but even if you are not necessarily a churched person right now or have not been for all of your life, I don't want to limit the scope here of the conversation. I just love to have you weigh in on this. Certainly Christmas has changed over the course of my lifetime. And in some ways it's been for the better, in other ways it's not been so good. But I will tell you this, my earliest recollections of Christmas are very sweet, and my mom in particular went out of her way to make sure that Christmas for my sister and I were very special, and things that moms would naturally do for their young children. I also do recall, however, that Christmas was a very formal and kind of stuffy and I suspect very stressful thing for my mom. And I grew up in Southern California. My parents raised me right in the region where my mother was from, her native hometown area. And my mom had a sister, and she was married and had kids. So I grew up with these cousins on my mom's side of the family. And our two respective families would always do Christmas Eve together and then Christmas night. And then Christmas morning was spent with our individual families. And my goodness, the pre-planning and the setting up of the dinner table for Christmas Eve and all the cleaning that went into that. And, you know, the placemat at the table has to go this way, not that way. And, oh, my goodness, the turkey was scheduled to be done at 5:38. It's 5:39, and we're running late. I mean, it was just kind of obsessional the way things had to be done on time, almost kind of militaristic, if you will. And I haven't experienced that in my adult life because my wife and I have very intentionally made choices to say, you know, we want to give Christmas its due. We want to enjoy the love and community, if you will, with immediate and extended family both. We want to be involved in the community. That's another thing, community involvement, reaching out to the less fortunate at the Christmas season. That's something that my wife and I have done with our son, which has been just terrific. But that's not something that I grew up doing. But the stuffiness and the formality and the rush, and the, oh my goodness, everything has to be just in place, just perfectly on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, or it's a failure. My wife and I have both gone out of our way to eliminate that and to let it go. And, you know, if dinner's supposed to start at 5:30, but it doesn't get on the table until 6 o'clock or 6:30, you know, we're going to be okay. God is still on the throne. Jesus is still arisen and in heaven, and we'll still celebrate his birth, whether the ham gets served on time or not. I mean, that's kind of the mindset that my wife and I have tried to adopt. And that's just a very personal, internal sort of thing within my own immediate and extended family. I'll have more to say about, I think, ways in which Christmas has changed in our culture. And but I want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Your thoughts on Christmas, your favorite Christmas holiday tradition, and how do you observe Christmas changing? How has it changed over the course of your lifetime? 877-933-2484. Amy, up next in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Amy, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, Austin.
Good morning.
Good morning. This particular topic is really a no-brainer for me personally because I just revel in listening and playing the incredible seasonal music that we have available to us. And just as a kind of weird side note, one of the fascinating things to me is that so many of them are in minor keys. People that know music will understand that.
Okay.
But minor keys tend to be more sad when you listen to the music. It'll sound sad.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a major key. But anyway, that is it for me right there. And I think the reason
What do you play, by the way?
I play the piano.
Piano, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So Christmas music has changed substantially over the course of your lifetime, is what you're saying. Do I hear that correctly?
Well, it has. But, I mean, how can you go wrong with Handel's Messiah, for instance? I mean, that hasn't changed.
I would hope not. But I tell you what, as long as you're on the subject here, I'm wondering if you have an opinion about this particular recording act, I guess. It's really just kind of one guy, Mannheim Steamroller. It's all electronic. Chip Davis is the guy, and I guess he's got some different instrumentals involved in it. But the impact, it seems to me, on what I hear year after year after year on radio and out about in public places and even in my own home when it comes to Christmas music, I would say the impact of Mannheim Steamroller has been pretty substantial. And as you're saying that, I think you said minor chords create a more sad tone, seems to me that he has done some arrangements of some traditional Christmas songs, like Silent Night, for example, and there are more minor chords in it in his arrangement. That's my perception. You're getting way beyond my concept of music and music theory and such, but what has been the impact of that group, that artist, if you will, and has it been good or bad? What do you think about that?
I think it's been wonderful. When you hear, even Rush Limbaugh plays Mannheim Steamroller, when it gets on national radio like that, as well as just regular radio stations, it's on talk radio as well. I love it. I love his interpretation of the different carols. In fact, when I play them, sometimes I find myself playing them, imitating some of the things that he's done.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And I have several of the CDs as well.
Very cool. Am I imagining things, or am I correct that there are more minor tones, minor chords, if you will, in the Mannheim Steamroller arrangement of Silent Night?
Oh, I haven't heard it for a couple of years, so I don't know.
Okay. To make things even further confusing, I think Mannheim Steamroller has recorded two renditions of that. I'm thinking of the original one that came out back several years ago, but very interesting. Amy, thank you. Thank you very much. I had not thought about the whole musical connection here, but thanks for keep playing. Thanks for your performance, and thanks for listening to Faith Radio. 877-933-2484. Kim up next in Madison, Wisconsin. Kim, welcome to our program. What's going on?
Well, you started my day off with a laugh. As you were talking about your mother's perfection, and I mean, the china had to be perfect. I so relate to that, and I was just dying laughing. But I, like your last caller, share a love of Christmas music, but I'd say more like I'm a Christmas carol junkie. I have been since childhood. It is something that I just latched onto. I sang in the choir as a little one, and later as the years went on, I accrued vinyl and CDs and MP3s of Christmas music. As time went on, in the last couple of years, I went ahead and joined a gospel choir. So I was singing the last two weekends and thoroughly enjoying it before and after services at different churches. I just really, truly enjoy the music. And I think what got me as a child is that the string throughout the Christian Christmas carols is that light came out of darkness. And I want to thank you for making me think about that. Why did I latch on? Well, I like music, but why did I... You know, we've got a lot of music. Why did those stick with me? And
yeah.
I think it's the year after year. It sort of weaves a thread through my life, and it connects year to year to year. So, but you also asked another question. What has changed at church, you asked, over the course of time? And that is, it seems like Advent has kind of gone by the wayside. There's no more purple ribbons on the church door with one pink one, and there's little discussion of joy and peace and love and hope. It seems like we prepare for Christmas, but Advent is sort of like nondescript, at least in the denomination that I have been in, and most of my adult life has been in non-denominational worship.
Well, that's an interesting observation, Kim, and I appreciate the call very much. I don't see a lot of recognition of Advent or even the use of the term Advent as in Advent season in the non-denominational churches that I've been in more recent years, not even the one that my family and I belong to currently. As a matter of fact, my son and I, my wife is out of town visiting family in California, and on Christmas Day, my son and I will fly to California and join her there. But last time, my son and I were at a candlelight Christmas Eve service, basically. I mean, here we are 3 or 4 days out from Christmas itself, and our church did a candlelight Sunday evening thing last night. No discussion of Advent. I've been trying to, I guess, kind of reintroduce or keep the term Advent season in the vernacular to the extent that I can. I've been making references these past several weeks to Christmas and the Advent season, and I think there's significance in that. But Kim, thanks very much. 877-933-2484 is our number. 1-877-933-2484. Tell me about your favorite Christmas holiday tradition, whether it's something within your own family, in your church, whatever the context, and how has the celebration of Christmas changed over the course of your lifetime, for better or maybe not so much for better? Either way, 1-877-933-2484. More in moments. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill.
You think. Join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
That's our number, 1-877-933-2484. 1-877-933-2484. That, I believe, is music from the, Trans-Siberian Orchestra. There we go. Thank you. My wife loves them, actually. Last time they came to town in our community, she was heartbroken that I didn't know about it in advance and buy tickets for the concert. So that's how I remember Trans-Siberian Orchestra. But that's a recording act, which I know very little of. I recognize that arrangement, quite frankly, and so I'm familiar with that. And certainly, as we talked about earlier, the Mannheim Steamroller recording act, which is pretty much just one guy, an arranger and composer named Chip Davis, who does both sacred and non-sacred Christmas music on several of his recordings. I actually saw Mannheim Steamroller many years ago. I think there was like two or three people. It's like Chip Davis and a couple of technicians on stage and lots of big, huge speakers and computers and such. It's quite fascinating. But those two recording acts, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, whatever that name means, and Mannheim Steamroller, whatever that name means, they really, I think, in many respects have kind of transformed Christmas music, at least as we have become accustomed to hearing it over the years, and probably for the better. They've certainly brought some creativity to, I guess, the pop music mix as it pertains to Christian music, right? But how about you? What are some Christmas traditions that are near and dear to your heart? And how has Christmas, the celebration of Christmas, changed over the course of time, over the course of your lifetime, either for the better or maybe not so much? It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I will tell you, and I don't talk about this a lot because I don't want this to come across as sounding as though I'm behind the microphone here at the big Faith Radio Network talking about all the great volunteerism and community service that I engage in. I don't mean it that way, but my wife and son and I, for the bigger part of the last 3 or 4 years or so, have made it a point on Thanksgiving and or Christmas, sometimes both, to in and around the this time of the year, to spend time serving the poor in our community. And there is a particular Christian-based, non-denominational, evangelical-based homeless shelter or rescue mission in our community And my son actually does a lot of volunteer work for them. He's gotten into some very interesting volunteer projects, which have led to him creating business opportunities for some of the people being served at the rescue mission. That's a whole other thing. But that, you know, when you serve in a ministerial capacity like that, you really do get a lot in return. And I don't believe that should be our motivation for participating in volunteerism, service, ministry, those kinds of things. But it's had a real transformative effect on my wife and I, and on my son in particular, especially some of the extra over and above volunteer work that he does at the rescue mission throughout the course of each month for last couple of years now. But we spend time on Christmas Eve, sometimes the day before Christmas Eve, sometimes Christmas morning, serving meals, doing cleanup work in the kitchen, and that became a periodic year-round kind of thing for us. My parents didn't do that. I'm nothing critical of my parents. That's not the point. But that just wasn't something that I was compelled to do as a youngster. That's something that my wife and I have chosen to do, and it's had just such an amazing ripple effect. I highly recommend it. 877-933-2484 is the number. Lars is up next in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Lars, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Austin. I don't know if it's really a favorite, but one thing we like to joke about in my among my friends is lutefisk dinners at Christmas time.
Yeah, that's a dried fish thing of some sort. I think that has.
Yeah, kind of. It actually was fish that was soaked in lye, and then you rinse off the lye, but when you cook it,
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, because lye, is very bad for you. But you cook it, after you cook it, it really has a strong, strong smell and not much flavor to it. That's why you add a lot of the butter and cream sauce. But, you know, the smell is enough right there. We just joke about how bad it is, but it was a pretty common thing among a lot of people up this way.
Yeah, now that the history of that delicacy, shall we say, traces back to Sweden and Norway, I do believe, correct?
Kind of. It was mainly with the settlers here in the United States. Because they wanted the fish from the old country, but, you know, the idea of shipping fish, especially before, you know, there was, like we have now with refrigeration, it was hard. And so what they did, that was why where the lye came in. That would kill anything. And, of course, it also killed the flavor.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. Is it common? I don't know this because I'm not from the upper Midwest. Is it common that churches would have lutefisk fries or, you know, serve lutefisk on some sort of large scale?
Yeah, actually it is pretty common. Not as much as it used to be, but there still are quite a few churches up this way that will have lutefisk dinners.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Very good. And are you preparing to consume lutefisk anytime soon in the next, 72 hours or so?
I don't think so. Sorry.
Not this year. All right, very good. Lars, thanks. Good to have you with us. Thanks for listening to the Faith Radio Network. It's 1-877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. I noticed on my computer screen here that the caller wanted to talk about lutefisk, so I very quickly read up on that on my computer here. And one of those moments where Wikipedia proved to be very helpful to the host, if you know what I mean. That said, more on Christmas 2014 as we continue into the next hour. After the news at 7 o'clock, we've got SRN News at the top of the hour, 7 o'clock, into the 7 a.m. hour. We will check in yet again with our great friend, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor. She is a clinical counselor, professor, and the author. She's got a very interesting book coming out in 2015 that we'll be hearing a lot about. I'll be asking her about it quite a bit, but she'll be here talking about some ways to avoid depression over the holidays. 10 suggestions on how to stay clear from depression. So that's coming up into the 7 o'clock hour. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Yeah, I thought I noticed something, some aroma wafting down the hallway here at Faith Radio. Turns out somebody has brought a platter of lutefisk, and it's awaiting us in the break room. We'll take a lutefisk break. We've got SRN News at the top of the hour, 7 a.m. Much more ahead. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
It's now 7:04. Good morning and welcome to the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill. Here weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. Hope your day is off to a great start and your travel plans and family get-togethers are all, you know, all in place. And the schedule's going so far. I talked earlier this morning about how when I was a child, my mother and my mother's sister, hence my aunts, they were just obsessive about making sure that, you know, if the clock, the little wind-up alarm thing said that, you know, the ham would be done at 5:39 p.m., well, my goodness, it better be done at 5:39, if not 5:38 or 5:37, because if it comes out of the oven at 5:40, there's a crisis that will ensue. That was kind of the obsessional sort of Christmas experiences of my childhood. I'm still working through it as an adult. How's that? Anyway, I like to take a deep breath and be a little bit more relaxed and a little more accommodating to human beings and individual persons and their less than perfect adherence to schedules and clocks. Can we just agree that maybe the Advent season, if you will, as we celebrate the Redeemer of the world coming into the world, at this time of the year, the birth of Christ, as we celebrate this, could we not just maybe kind of take a deep breath and agree that maybe this is a good time to maybe let the schedule slip by us just a little bit? Sure, if you're doing a Christmas Eve service, if you work at a church, and things are supposed to start right at 6 o'clock and you've got another one at 7:30, well, okay, I get that. You need to stay on schedule. And we, by the way, here at Faith Radio, we can't, well, let me appeal to the wisdom of Aaron McIntyre on the other side of the glass enclosed booth here at our studios. Aaron, when the clock says that we launched the program at exactly 7:04 and 10 seconds, well, we can't just arbitrarily say, it'll be 7:10 this morning or 7:06. I mean, that would just, we have to adhere to a schedule. And we're nodding in approval and agreement here. We have to maintain schedules. A lot of us do. But with our own personal family get-togethers, it seems to me that this is probably a good time to maybe chill just a little bit. Anyway, that's it. That's just me. We were talking earlier this morning about Christmas holiday traditions and how they changed over the years. We'll see if we can work in some more calls on that coming up later this hour. In just a moment, see, I'm going to count this down to the exact minute. In approximately 2 minutes and 35 seconds from now, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, will join us. Dr. Linda, of course, she is with us every couple of weeks, if not more regularly, here on our morning program. She's got a great new book out coming up into the new year, which we'll talk about. She's also, just in time for Christmas, authored this piece called 10 Ideas to Avoid Depression During the Holidays. Let's talk about having a strategy of coping with what for some people is a very difficult time of the year, the Christmas season, and getting together with families. Dr. Linda, my guest, coming up next. It's now 7:07. This is the Faith Radio Network. We're glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill.
Hill in the Morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
It's now 7:09. Good morning. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. You've probably heard it several times over the last several days. You'll probably hear it in the coming few days. Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas or something to that effect. It's just commonplace, it's part of our vernacular, that this is a very, very happy time of the year. But what if you don't feel so happy? One can feel pretty left out. One might be led to believe that they're a problem and everybody else is normal. Well, maybe not so much. Maybe depression and feelings of sadness at this time of the year are more common than any of us realize. It could be the case. Joining us to talk about it, our great friend Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor. She's here to talk to us about her book on depression. She's got 10 ideas to avoid becoming depressed over the holidays. So dare I say, after that ramp up, happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you, Dr. Linda.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, and I'm glad we're talking about this subject, because if you look at just the statistics, 1 in 10 people struggle with depression. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of people that are listening to us right now. The chances are that at least 1 or 2 listening to us are struggling with depression. And I want to start, Austin, with a myth, that the idea that a lot of people believe. A lot of people think, because they say it all the time on radio and in television, it's not true, that there are a huge rise in suicide during the holiday season.
Okay.
And I want to say that's not true. December has the fewest suicides of any months, but what happens is after Christmas, there is a significant rise in suicide and suicide attempts. So Christmas seems to be somewhat protective and, kind of helps because there's a lot of activity, even though people are feeling depressed. But there's a rebound effect after that, and that's where we really have to be careful. So if you have a loved one who's struggling with depression, monitor that person during the holiday season, but really pay attention after all the activities and all everything that has to do with the holidays are over, because that's when they're in trouble. Now, saying that, we need
yes.
to know that social isolation, which is one of the predictors of depression, can be a real problem during the holidays. And there are a number of people walking around feeling depressed, feeling lonely, and in danger of that rebound effect after the holidays. So I think it's really good we're tackling this.
I'm glad you brought that up. Dr. Linda Mintel on our guest line here at Faith Radio, she's authored what she calls 10 Ideas to Avoid Depression During the Holidays, and that social isolation that you alluded to, Dr. Linda, put that in the context of, I guess it's item number 10 on your list. Item number 10 is enjoy the moment. You wrote, sometimes we get so caught up with what needs to be done, we lose the moment, let go of perfectionism, savor moments with family and friends and so forth. How do we make sure that people are savoring the moment, even if they're doing it alone, and not slumping into some form of social isolation?
Well, when you're enjoying the moment and you're by yourself, you have to look at what are your thoughts. And one of the problems with depression is that we have negative thinking associated with depression. So the person that has is depressed is thinking things like, I'm all by myself here, I'm looking at the tree, there's no one with me, I'm remembering the people I loved who are not with me anymore, I had a breakup, this is terrible. So one of the things that you have to do is you have to grab a hold of those thoughts, and you have to focus intentionally on the blessings in your life, on the positive things that have happened, so that when you are in the moment, you're looking at that tree and you're going, wow, you know, this is beautiful. It's just a symbol, but it's a symbol of God's love. You know, that it's a reminder of the season. The lights on it are reminding me of the light of the world, which is here to give me hope.
Mm-hmm.
So how you think about those moments make a difference in terms of if you can actually savor the moment, or that moment by yourself becomes a moment of negativity, and in that isolation you begin to go in a downward spiral, and that's what you don't want to do.
Dr. Linda Mintel, she has written a book called Breaking Free from Depression. She's on our guest line here on Faith Radio, as she is on a regular basis. And most recently, she's written what she calls 10 Ideas to Avoid Depression During the Holidays. And if this is not something that you can identify with, necessarily impacts you directly, think of these tips, these ideas, in the context of family and friends and people that you hold dear at this time of the year. There are probably people in your midst that could be suffering, and maybe we can offer some help. Let me get to number one on the list. This is, to me, Dr. Linda, this is applicable whether we may be inclined to depressive feelings over the holidays or not. Number one, don't overspend. How big of an issue is this overspending thing in your estimation, clinically speaking, that is?
It's a big deal, because what happens in January is the bills hit and people are sitting in my office going, wow, I mean, I got caught up on the online deals. You know, I made these huge purchases on Black Friday. I saw all these discounts and free shipping, and e-shopping obviously is very tempting for a lot of us. So what happens then is that you do all this spending because you're in the mood and the music is playing and you're out in the malls and everything looks so tempting and great, and you want to give to other people, great intentions, and then there is no budget, and then in January you get all the bills and you start to feel really depressed and down. And finances is nothing to sneeze at, because this is one of the reasons why people sometimes attempt suicide. They feel like they have buried themselves in such a hole that they can't come out of, and they're letting down their family, and they're not doing the responsible thing. And sometimes they think, and it's a terrible thought, I don't want anybody thinking this, but you know, if I just check out, then the problem will be solved. So you really have to stay on top of the spending during the holiday, and the best way to do that is to have a budget. And for some people listening, don't even go on the internet with the e-shopping, because it's just too hard to regulate for some people.
Yeah, very interesting. Is there a concern in your estimation, clinically speaking, again, that some people gobble up the gift items and buy stuff, whether it's online or maybe it's through, you know, the home shopping TV channel, or they go to the, you know, the big box store or whatever. They're buying stuff all ostensibly because it's really priced well and it's really inexpensive, but there's some sense in which they're trying to meet emotional needs with material goods, material substances. Is that a problem in your view?
Absolutely. It's a substitute symptom, what we call it. So some people overeat when they're feeling empty and lonely and bored and maybe depressed. Sometimes people gamble and they have a gambling problem. Sometimes people will drink. And certainly substance abuse at the holidays, again, another one of those huge issues that you have to stay on top of and not go to things and allow yourself to, you know, be engaged in a lot of drinking or be with people who are, because that just causes problems during the holidays. But when you look at those kinds of symptoms, that, you know, you're medicating yourself in some way for some emptiness that you're feeling, shopping, and I've got several articles on my blog about compulsive shopping or impulsive shopping, where shopping is just another way to fill that emptiness and to you know, look at your life and go, I don't have meaning, I don't have purpose, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm not in a great relationship. Maybe stuff can make me feel better. And a lot of people struggle with that. And, of course, the commercialization of Christmas implies to us, you know, that stuff is going to make us feel better. I remember a commercial, I don't know if I talked to you about this, but I remember this commercial one time I saw where it was a commercial for some sweater. Some, you know, company was selling sweaters, and they said, the man may leave you, but the sweater will always be with you.
Oh, no. Say it isn't so. That you really saw that a commercial manufacturer actually used that verbiage.
Yeah. So the idea here is, you know, the stuff will make you feel better even when people won't. And we know that it's exactly the opposite, that stuff is pretty empty when we all have it. And interesting research related to that is the more stuff you get, the research says that you acclimate to that level of happiness or satisfaction so that you're constantly wanting more.
Yes.
So it doesn't satisfy. It actually it makes you want more. And we know that there's no ultimate satisfaction in buying stuff.
Well, it's Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, back with us again. We need to take a quick break. We'll continue in a moment. She's got 10 ideas on avoiding depression during the holidays. We'll continue with Dr. Linda momentarily. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
Said the night went to the little lamb.
It's now 7:20. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We might say Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas. We may regard this as a blessed and gracious and happy time of the year. And certainly by design, by intention, it is supposed to be that way. But the Christmas season, the holiday season, if you will, is oftentimes very difficult for people, and depression and depressive feelings oftentimes emerge. Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, she knows this very well. She's written a book, Breaking Free from Depression. She's also authored what she calls 10 Ideas to Avoid Depression During the Holidays. She's on our guest line. Once again, one of the things that you warn, I take this as a warning, but a tip, a suggestion, if you will, moderate your eating and drinking. How does eating and drinking correlate with feelings of depression?
Well, a lot of people don't think about the fact that alcohol is a sedative. It's not a stimulant. It actually creates a down mood. And too much alcohol can actually bring on depression in people. It's one of the questions we always ask when people are having difficulty with substance abuse. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of substance abuse around Christmas time. We ask about depression because it usually goes hand in hand. The other thing that people don't always think about, there's a lot of goodies at Christmas. So, I mean, right in our office, we just had a Christmas contest with decorating our offices. And there, in every office, there are like piles of cookies and cupcakes and sugar stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, wait, I'm an eating disorders therapist. This is not good.
Don't go there.
If you have all that sugar and all that fat, it makes you tired, and then it makes you cranky, and your blood sugar drops. And one of the things, even if you're not prone to depression, Austin, if we think about it, the holidays, we have all these overwhelming demands. We have overcommitments. We have financial worries. We eat and drink too much, and then people get really upset with, I'm gaining weight, I'm going to have to get this off, and it's much harder after the holidays to get the weight off than it was to put the weight on.
Sure.
So, you have to, again, you have to be intentional, aware, monitor your intake, limit, do what the Bible says, and do all things in moderation, and you'll be okay.
That's great advice. You also know, Dr. Linda, that we should examine our expectations over the Christmas holiday season. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is where we get in the most trouble. We see these Hallmark movies, and we read, you know, stories about the wonderful Christmas time, and we see families depicted, although not so much anymore on television. We used to see a lot of idealistic families. But what you really need to think about is if you have family problems and you're going to get together at the holidays, those family problems don't disappear at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really can ramp up and create a lot of stress if you don't handle things right. You and I talked about how to deal with difficult family at Christmas a few weeks ago. But you need to look at your expectations and say, okay, what's realistic? And even your expectations for the demands that are on you. What can I realistically do? Do I need to start saying no to all the requests I have to bring cookies to this, to attend that event, to, you know, volunteer for this, to go to the soup kitchen? I think you should go to the soup kitchen before you do other things.
Yes.
But, you know, you need to look at it realistically and say, what can I actually do, and what is my life really like and the people I'm going to be around, and let me get my head more prepared for that and not just expect things to be different just because it's Christmas.
That's all good advice. What would you say, Dr. Linda, to the person who's listening saying, you know, I'm not concerned about feeling depressed myself this season, but I'm really concerned about fill in the blank, my in-law, my parents,
yeah,
my best friend, without us unnecessarily, unduly, codependently getting wrapped up in somebody else's struggle here, how can we come alongside and, with appropriate boundaries, be helpful to others?
I think inviting people into activities is a really good way to do it. I've looked around the office and just checked with everybody. Do you have a place to go on Christmas? Do you have a dinner to go to? Do you have family or somebody coming in, offering to invite them into your home, to check on them, to make sure they're okay? I think especially this time of year, the elderly, a lot of times we forget that, you know, they don't get out to go to church sometimes if they're in a nursing home or
yes,
someplace where they're more restricted with mobility. To just look around, and it's a really great time of year, Austin, to see the need and to reach out to people and go that extra mile by visiting people in their home if they can't get out, by offering rides to people, by doing what I just talked about, going to a soup kitchen. It's a great activity for your family to get involved in, to see the needs of those people around you and be responsive. And even financially, you know, help out somebody who's struggling and in need. I guess it's paying attention to the people that you think may be struggling. And one of the categories we haven't talked about are the people that have had great losses during this time of year and are,
yes,
grieving the loss of a loved one. To make sure that you're talking about that loss, you're allowing the person to grieve, and you're including them in some kind of activity, and so they don't feel left out of that time of year.
I'm so glad you brought that up. There are people in our midst, I'm sure, who are experiencing the first Christmas season without that loved one. What would you say to the individual who may be facing a situation, and this is a situation in my own family that I've talked about quite a bit on the program, we may be facing a situation where we anticipate this will be the last Christmas,
mm-hmm,
with this friend, this family member who may be near death. But offer some advice on that, if you would.
Well, make time, make the time, and spend the time. Say the things you need to say. Develop. I think it's really good to do a little pictorial thing where you pull out good pictures. You make a little. Maybe you can even make a photo essay online and show it, remembering good moments, things that have been important in your life, milestones, that kind of thing. And make sure you spend that time, because if it is the last time, you want to leave that event going, okay, this was a meaningful time. We said the things we need to say. Tell the person you love them, you know, send them a scripture, text them, maybe if they're on text, some kind of scripture or uplifting comment. It doesn't have to be a big, long thing, just thinking of you, praying for you, love you, you know, that kind of thing, and make sure that the person feels loved and know that they're cared about and that their life had meaning and it impacted you in a very meaningful way.
All great advice from Dr. Linda Mental. We like to call her the relationship doctor. She's written numerous books, one of them entitled Breaking Free from Depression. We've got info on that at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And into the new year, I want to, you know, look ahead to the year 2015. We can expect a book from you called something like We Need to Talk, right?
That's right. We're gonna talk about how to deal with conflict in your relationships and to do it in a healthy way so that you grow your relationship and not avoid conflict and get in trouble.
And yes, thank you for that. And we will talk about We Need to Talk.
That's right.
Yeah,
we will talk as we need to talk about
yes,
We Need to Talk.
Yes, we do. Appreciate that. Dr. Linda Mental, always great fun and some tremendous insight for all of us. Very merry and a blessed Christmas to you and yours, Dr. Linda. We look forward to talking again soon.
Okay, same to you. Merry Christmas.
It's 7:28. This is Faith Radio. It's now 7:37 on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. Monday is well underway. Yes, it's a. It just already feels like a different kind of week, doesn't it? Probably crazy if you're trying to get last-minute work details taken care of before the Christmas holiday season, and I can certainly appreciate that. We are still, however, asking for your support. We're closing in on our goal of support for the Angel Tree Program and Outreach of Prison Fellowship Ministries. Make that call, won't you? It's 1-855-59-ANGEL, 1-855-59-ANGEL. You and I and our respective families, we can step up and make the difference in the life of the child who is disconnected from their parents because of incarceration. Parents who are in prison or jail, what have you. 1-855-59-ANGEL. Let's listen now to the story of Christina.
Christina doesn't remember a time when her father wasn't in prison.
My name is Christina Allen. I'm 24 years old. My father was incarcerated when I was 3 years old for murder, burglary, and arson. And he's not scheduled to get out of prison until 2038.
But Christina did have someone she could count on. A mother who kept the family together and even organized anxious trips to the prison for a little girl to see her daddy.
The times going in to the prison, my focus was more so on going to visit daddy, more so than the strip search and everything else that encompasses those visits, because it's daddy, and no matter what, little girls love their fathers.
Daddy was someone Christina visited twice a year. Mommy was the consistent presence in her life, until just after Christina's 12th birthday.
I didn't realize how big of an impact my father's incarceration played until I was 12 years old and my mom passed away.
Now alone, Christina's thoughts turned to her father in prison.
Because I didn't have him there, I began to build up a lot of hatred in my heart towards him.
As a young teenager, Christina was looking for something, anything she could count on. That first Christmas after her mother died, there was a knock on the door, and she realized there was something that had been consistent for just about all her life. Angel Tree. Prison Fellowship had not missed a single year.
It made me feel special inside. Every year, he would send me a gift through Angel Tree, and it's something I grew to expect every Christmas.
Because she had not been forgotten by Angel Tree, Christina realized she had not been forgotten by God.
I realized that God had never turned his back on me. He was always there to keep me safe from harm. I had to give him back the only thing that I had that was worthy, and that was my life.
What has God done with that surrendered life? Christina earned an MBA by age 22. With her husband, she launched an Angel Tree outreach at their university and their home church. But part of her will always be an Angel Tree kid. She still cherishes her favorite Angel Tree gift, a jewelry box from her dad.
I began to hold items that were near and dear to my heart inside of it. I kept the ID card that I took with me when I visited my dad. I also kept jewelry that my mom gave me before she passed away. To me, it was always a box that I could go to for small but great memories of my mom and my dad. Although they were gone, they still lived in my heart.
For hurting children across America, Angel Tree gifts confirm they are not forgotten. This Christmas, would you help a boy or girl like Christina know there is hope and a future?
Call now and let them know you care. It's 1-855-59-ANGEL. 1-855-59-ANGEL. We are just overwhelmed with gratitude and appreciation for the support of Faith Radio listeners for the Angel Tree program. You can make that call right now, 1-855-59-ANGEL. Now, let's listen to yet another testimony. This is the story of Shakira.
In prisons all over the country, in late summer or early fall, prison chaplains encourage inmates to sign their children up for Angel Tree. Volunteers, like Arlene, call the legal guardians of those kids so that those children get just the right gift. It's a system that works, almost every time.
Last year, I spoke to a grandmother who was my contact person for three children, and I wanted to know what the children needed in terms of clothing and a fun item. And she gave me the information for the first child, and then when I asked for the information for the second child, there was such a long pause, and I said, "Are you still there?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, what does Shakira need this year, and what size is she?" And she said, "Shakira doesn't need anything this year." And I said, "Oh, my goodness, no, we really would like to provide for her." And she said, "Shakira won't need Christmas this year because she was murdered a couple of weeks ago with a shotgun blast to her stomach."
For Arlene, forever, Shakira will be a reminder that every single child counts. And Angel Tree is a privilege, a blessing, and an urgent rescue mission.
Then I realized the urgency of meeting the needs of these children that we're blessed to have and that we may only have one chance. Then I think about this year as we take on another 200 kids and how many of them are on the edge and that might not make it. And I challenge you to rescue just one of them and pull them back from that edge.
Make the call today, won't you? It's 1-855-59-ANGEL. 1-855-59-ANGEL. It won't take a whole lot of time on the telephone. It really won't. The folks who answer the phone at Angel Tree, they're very quick. They're very efficient. They'll get some information from you. And you'll be surprised at how little money, how little financial resources it takes to make a big difference in the life of children whose parents are away from them because of jail time, whether they're in a local jail or a prison facility. 1-855-59-ANGEL. That's the number to Angel Tree. It's now 7:45. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. We're so glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill. It's the Monday before Christmas, and we hope it's going well. Thanks for being with us on Faith Radio. On the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8. As we seek to connect faith to life, that's a very nice instrumental interlude there. Aaron McIntyre on the other side of the glass enclosed booth. The nerve center of the Faith Radio Network, as it were. Can you tell me in my just whisper it in my headphones here what the artist is? You have no idea. Okay, appreciate that. Just spontaneous. I don't recognize the melody. Is that an identifiable Christmas melody to you? Oh, it's Away in a Manger. I realize this is talk radio, but if I would just stop talking, I probably would have recognized it. So I appreciate that. Pretty good. That's nice. I like that. Nice, different kind of rendition. Anywho, okay, so we're getting our act together live, real time here on Faith Radio, which is great. By the way, I did receive some fun, lighthearted messages, and I intended my remarks to be fun and lighthearted. I did have some listeners respond to me with a snicker, with a smile on their face. I could see the smirk coming through in their text messages sent through myfaithradio.com. They got kind of a chuckle, and I suspect probably the smirk and the smile was probably because a lot of people relate to my experience. But I was talking earlier this morning here on the program about how when I was a child, my mother, my beloved mother, God rest her soul, she passed away a decade ago, actually. It was 10 years ago this summer. She's been gone for quite a while, and I'm not stomping on my mom's grave, no disrespect, but she was a little obsessive with the Christmas plants. You know, if she and her sister, my aunt, if they planned for the ham to be done at 5:42 p.m. and 30 seconds, well, my goodness, if the ham came out of the oven at 5:43, it was late. And, you know, if we didn't start till 5:53 eating the dinner, well, you know, we were just, that was going to ruin the evening. It was that kind of obsessive kind of thing. And my wife and I, in our adult years, we decided to try to make Christmas and its related celebrations and generally family matters in particular, in general, we tried to make them a little bit different than that. We just don't put that kind of pressure on one another. And if one or the other of us gets a little uppity about schedules and, my goodness, you said you'd get this cleaned. Why isn't it cleaned yet? That kind of thing. We hold each other in check. And that's made for, it's just been a good choice for us. It's all I'm saying. And I think some families can, other families aside from my own, can kind of relate to that assessment. Yeah, I mean, what is the season about, right? Anyway, I was talking about that earlier this morning, and I don't often talk about those kinds of things relative to my own personal experience, but I thought it was appropriate to do so. I'm going to do, however, something equally as unusual, and for me, this is a little bit edgy, and for those who know me well, they know that this is completely out of character for me. This just, you never expect me to do this. If we had a sound effect in our Microsoft operating system here in the studio, a sound effect of a scream of horror, Aaron McIntyre on the other side of the glass enclosed booth would probably play that scream of horror. I don't think he does, actually. I'm not asking for that. If you do, go right ahead. But anyway, this is edgy because, well, I would just warn you this way. Strap on your virtual seatbelts here because I'm going to say something about a movie. There we go. Yeah, there you go. That's the serious, intense instrumental music. It shows you that we're transitioning to something of a very serious nature. I'm really, please don't anybody take offense to this. I'm in a festive mood. I'm having a little fun here. And that big ramp up to me saying something edgy about a movie is not intended to offend anybody. I hope nobody calls the management and says, he's so offensive. Oh my goodness. I don't go to movies a lot. Yeah, you ever wonder why we have Bob Walaszewski, the film critic at PluggedIn.com? Wonder why we invite him onto our morning program on a regular basis? Because I'm clueless about these things. He's the expert. I draw on his expertise. I know how to ask him good questions. I'm just not a big movie guy. Much to the chagrin, by the way, of my wife and my son. They enjoy movies and have, I think, probably a healthier appreciation for such things. However, I have to say, this is probably the edgier direction here, the edgier portion of our program. My son and I mentioned earlier, my wife is, she's out of town. She's already traveled to Southern California to visit her ailing father. My son and I will meet up with her on Christmas Day. My son and I was seeking to do something that would bond with my son on Saturday evening. And I knew that he would enjoy going to see a movie. And as a matter of fact, before I even raised the issue to him, he said, Dad, would you be willing to go see a movie with me? And I said, why, yes, son, I will. And I will tell you, I went to see this film that is, I guess, getting panned and criticized pretty heavily in the evangelical Christian community. I do believe Bob Waliszewski was on our program just recently, and he rated it, I think, a 5 or a 6 on a scale of 1 to 10 or something. But it's the film that's getting a lot of attention, Exodus, Gods and Kings. Exodus, Gods and Kings. I will tell you that, again, this is from a complete novice here. I understand issues of culture and business and the economy better than most, and those are my real passion points of interest as far as the world around us, and I like to think in terms of what does our Christian faith have to say about business and the economy and the culture. Motion picture, I'm not a cinematic critic. I don't get that. I listen to what other people have to say. I go, oh, that's interesting. So this is just a complete novice critique here or novice recommendation here. There's nothing gratuitously sexual about it, but there is violence to the extent that I believe it probably quite accurately depicts the oppression of the Hebrews, the Jewish people, living under the very brutal rule of the country of Egypt. There is some sensationalism, I would say, in the way it characterizes the character of Moses. And there are some moments of artistic license, shall we say. The way, and you can imagine this would be kind of an obvious thing, right? The way in which the movie Exodus, Gods and Kings characterizes the parting of the Red Sea. I mean, that is such a monumental historic event that defies physical laws. It defies everything we know about the seas, right? The way that is portrayed is incredibly well done, but I am sure that there was some artistic license taken, and it does not adhere in a verse-by-verse basis necessarily to the way the parting of the Red Sea is characterized in the scriptures. That said, I was discussing this with my wife after Saturday night yesterday. We talked about this. I told her over the phone while she's in town. I said, all those Bible stories that I was taught as a young child about Pharaoh and his oppression of the Jewish people and Moses stepping up and saying, let my people go. And all of that that I learned, I memorized Bible verses about it when I was a kid. I sang little songs about it when I was a child in church. All of that came to life for me on the big screen in a movie theater Saturday night. Exodus, Gods and Kings. And my wife explained to me that actor Christian Bale, who plays the role of Moses, he apparently has said some very unflattering things about the character of Moses. That's fascinating. You make tens of millions of dollars playing a particular character in a motion picture contract, and then when it comes out on the shelf and everybody can go watch it and buy it and so forth, you bash on the character that you played. That's interesting business from Christian Bale. But his unflattering remarks of Moses are apparently getting around in the Christian community. I would encourage you, and this is probably, be age appropriate for this. It's probably not appropriate for young kids, if for no other reason, simply because of the violence involved and the brutality, the death, the mayhem. But it really did make the sufferings of God's chosen people, the Hebrews, the Jews, it really made that come to life. And I found it extraordinary. Exodus, Gods and Kings, that's an analysis, a critique, if you will, and a recommendation from me, your friend Austin Hill, who knows very little about cinematic creations and is the furthest thing from a film critic. Just so you know. 7:56 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. The Faith Radio Network is what you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life, and I'm here all week, actually, although on Christmas Day, we have all Christmas music being brought to you here on the Faith Radio Network, so you can listen to that on your local broadcast affiliate and listen in at myfaithradio.com. Back tomorrow morning at 6, SRN News on the way next. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com.